Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Tuesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXE Acre, 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today's guest is Ryan Bosch. Ryan has lived in the city of Poughkeepsie and a couple of surrounding towns for most of his life. By day, Ryan is a barista at the Crafted Cup, Poughkeepsie's premier coffee house on Raymond Avenue. And by night, he is one of the hosts of Dead Radio Podcast, which continues to grow in popularity with every passing show. Ryan studied audio engineering and production at the Institute of Audio Research in New York City and was a broadcast radio engineer for 9 years. He also works for Cumulus Media, now Town Square Media, in Poughkeepsie, which consists of the radio stations WPDH, WRRV, Mix 97.7 and The Wolf. Ryan has been married for 7 years to his wife Brooke and they've been together since 2001. His passions are podcasting, music and comedy, although he's still working on finding the courage to do stand-up. Ryan is a huge fan of sci-fi and horror movie genres. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hey there, Ryan.
How you doing,
man, fellas? Thanks for having me on.
It's great. It's a lovely sunny day today.
Above
wonderful
the clouds.
Seattle weather. This is a kind of departure for me. So you're going to have to bear with me.
Yes, we're bearing.
I'm going to have to try not to curse the whole time. Don't curse.
Yes, because I've been on your podcast and there was a lot of swearing going down. Although not from me. If you look back on the archives, I never swore once.
Yeah, but you gave us a really great line that I don't know if I can repeat, but we use that now as like if I crack a joke, what is it? You're dating me not in your back. So every time I like screw up a joke,
well, if there's any Scottish people listening, then I will be off the air soon.
I was going to say we would have to edit that out if anybody could understand it.
So Ryan, you've lived in this area all your life, and we're talking about Poughkeepsie.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes this place special for you?
I grew up in the town of Poughkeepsie, off of Vassar Road, which I guess is town of Poughkeepsie South, and those are my formative years, I would say. And I moved to the city with, you know, now my wife, my girlfriend at the time, Brooke. And we left, went to Highland, came back. I just, for some reason, I'm just drawn to the area. I don't know what it is. It's kind of like there's a roughness to it on top of like a good music scene, a good art scene. There's a lot of different things happening, especially with people that I went to school with, high school with, are opening their own businesses and everything like that. So I think there's a lot of potential in Poughkeepsie, and that grime is still there. So that's kind of why I like it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful yet ugly at the same time.
I think that sums it up quite nicely, actually. I mean, I'm obviously new to the area, relatively speaking, and there is, as you say, wherever you want to look for it, there is culture and there is good music and there is good coffee and there is good bars and, you know, in amongst the, you know, you maybe need to sweep the dust off the top, but you'll find it just underneath, you know.
Yeah.
And it's great for that, you know.
Well, and tremendous history, even just on the drive down here east of 87 in the Hudson River. I drove through Claremont and Rhinebeck. You know, the sign Rhinebeck was established in like 1696 or something, you know, these really old towns. And it was kind of funny. I went through Germantown, established 1710, then Rhinebeck, late 1600s. And it's funny, like, as you get closer to New York City, they get older and older because, you know, they had to gradually move their way up. Mm-hmm. And you've got Vanderbilt Mansion and Roosevelt. There's a lot. There's a lot to do here and explore.
Yeah, it's nice to have all the Samuel Morse House, the inventor of Morse code also.
Yeah.
You can hike around that area. It's nice to have a strong history around here.
Yeah. And, you know, things like the walking rail trail and stuff.
You know,
that's a beautiful view. I don't know if you've ever been over that, Mike.
I have not, no.
You need to go over that. Especially on a sunny day.
The jewel of Poughkeepsie.
Yes.
When they were first putting it up, I didn't understand the point of it. And then when it finally went up and you took a walk, my wife and I have ridden the length of it from Highland all the way down to Hopewell.
Right.
And back. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. This is a good thing. This is a good like tourist attraction. It's it gets people out and moving. They hold, they can hold events and everything on it, and it it just adds to the I don't know,
the community. I agree with you. It's superb. So I mean, I run often, and I run on the rail trail, not over the bridge, the other side of the bridge towards Hopewell. It's beautiful, you know. There's and you feel safe, and you know, and it's great.
So. Which is crazy because it's 17 miles of rail trail in the woods and everything. Yet you feel safe. You do. It's kind of strange.
Now you were an audio engineer. You still are an audio engineer, but you recently, I gather, gave that up in order to.
Yeah, I used to work for digital radio engineering in Port Jervis, New York. I worked there for about 9 years. I liked it. I did like it. I learned a ton, but it was a lot of stress, a lot of, like, you know, I live in Poughkeepsie, so I was commuting to Port Jervis, and I'd go to Port Jervis, and then I'd get into the company truck, and then I'd travel up to Albany or Pennsylvania.
That's a lot of driving backwards.
It was just a lot of driving and a lot of commuting and a lot of time alone in the car. And I was realizing that I didn't know much about Poughkeepsie, and I didn't know the people here, and I just didn't feel connected to where I wanted to be. And it was taking up a lot of my time, and the stress was just too much, and I'm 34. So if I don't make a shift.
You don't look 34.
I know, right?
You look more 35? Like
35. Yeah, not a day over 35. I needed to kind of ground myself and focus on things that I would prefer to do.
Yeah,
that give me, you know, a sense of joy instead of something that's just
a chore.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm not speaking against the company. I think. You know, I learned a ton from them, and
it's a personal decision.
Yeah, it's just I needed to make a change, and I'm 34, and if I don't do something now,
and you know, Ryan, that takes courage. You know, so good kudos to you, because a lot of people, you know, will say, well, I can't do that. I've got good health insurance. I've got a mortgage to pay. I've got this. I've got that. I've got this, and I need to stick it out. And
all of
it takes courage. Yeah. So well done you. Well, and you make a good coffee, I have to say.
Thank you.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'd take to coffee making like a duck to water. And my wife, I really have to shout her out, because she was on, when I was hemming and hawing about moving on, she was the one saying, just do it. Yeah. Just go. Just figure something out. We'll make it work.
And because she wants you to be happy as well, doesn't she?
So. Well, she wants me to be happy, but on the, you know, the same token is, it is a little bit selfish on her part too, because she wants me to be happy so she doesn't have to deal with me being miserable at the same time. So
now your first song is by a band called Gas Huffer. Am I saying that?
Gas Huffer.
Gas Huffer.
Like as into Huff Gasoline.
The Piano Movers. Can you tell us about that band?
Gas Huffer is a band out of Seattle, and they were big during the whole Seattle music scene. We'll call it grunge. And the funny thing about them is when you hear it, it's not quite what the grunge sound is to most people. Mm. The grunge sound to most people is Nirvana, Mudhoney, and all that. These guys are more like a surf punk type. But since they were out of Seattle and they had that kind of attitude and that zaniness to them and that kind of unpolished sound, it was considered grunge. And now the reason I chose these guys instead of Mudhoney or Mother Love Bone or Green River is just that they just spoke to me on a certain level, because they don't seem to take themselves too seriously. No. And that's kind of my whole life, everything to me, like I can find a joke pretty much anywhere. And I love humor and I love to just have fun and, you know, everything to be kind of light. And these guys kind of, every time I hear them, it reminds me that whenever I'm creating, not to take myself too seriously.
Was Gas Huffer, the Piano Movers. Now, Ryan, I know you've got a story to tell us, but before I let you do that, did you know that their last gig was in the Crocodile Cafe?
Yeah.
The reason I'm bringing it up, because is that any correlation to one of your next items or your future items?
Yeah. Okay. It is.
Right. So we'll talk about that later then.
Absolutely.
So, your story.
I found out that Gas Huffer was breaking up. I can't remember how many. I think it was about 10 years ago, I would say. And I was bummed out about it because their last show was at the Crocodile Cafe. That's in Seattle. And there was just no way, at the time, no way that I could possibly get out to the West Coast to see them. So I decided to write their drummer, Joe Newton, an email, because I found his email on some place that he used to work, like a graphic design place anyway. So I sent him the email, and he responded back within like a day or two.
Wow.
And he's just thanking me for my, you know, support of the band and everything like that. And the guitar player, and his name escapes me, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And it was becoming a problem touring and everything like that. And they'd been around for like 20 some odd years. So there really was no, they had done everything that they needed to do. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't get really popular, but just hearing back from one of my favorite bands of all time, just that quickly. And that just hearing back from them was a really, really cool thing.
Do you still have the email?
I don't know. I got to dig around for it. I don't think I do, but you know, it doesn't really matter to me. Like, I'm not...
It's up here, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in here. I know that he got back to me. I know the gist of what he said, and that's all I care about. Yeah. You know, it's just...
Excellent. That's cool. That's a cool story, actually.
Yeah. Ryan, your first item is your acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
Which I saw has a Trogdor Burninator bumper sticker.
Yeah. This is the first guitar I ever bought. I know it's a visual thing, and this radio is perfect for visuals. It's just an Ibanez kit guitar. Just cheapo, whatever. And
but it's yours.
But it's mine, and it was the first one I ever got, and I swore to myself I'd never sell it, I'd never get rid of it. Recently, if you look, the that metal band across it,
yeah, I was about
right,
to ask you about
right
that
below
was.
The bridge, the top of the guitar started to pull away from the body.
Ooh.
So instead of getting it repaired by a professional, I decided to take Gorilla Glue and a couple radiator hose clamps and just wrap it and glue it and wrap it around so that the glue could set. Then as I was, you know, waiting for the glue to set, I was like, I'm just going to leave the straps on.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just adds to it because it's covered in stickers, all different bands that I like and different, you know, just quips and all kinds of wild stuff. And I think it, to me, it, for me, it defines when you, if I'm playing it, that's, you're, I'm defining myself yeah. with this guitar. So, I don't know.
It's a cool looking guitar, I must admit. It's one of those, you know, it's, you see people putting bumper stickers in their cars and stuff like that. So you've opted for the guitar.
Yeah, I just, yeah. And I like to tell everybody that the stickers add to the structural integrity of the guitar and it changes the sound. I get more of a bassy sound from it with all the stickers on it, which is not true.
Does the strap affect the sound?
It did at first because it didn't have it tight enough, and then I tightened it some more, and then now it doesn't. It used to ring a little bit, but now it doesn't.
Cool.
So,
and you know, if you're taking it to the Catskill cabin in the mountains, then you can, if you need be, you can take one of the two of the strings off and go fishing.
Yeah. If you had to.
I usually don't play the high E strings very often, so I could take that one off, and that's the thinnest one.
Yeah.
Piece of cake.
There you go.
Would you want to play anything today?
No. Okay. I don't play very often, and I used to be in bands and everything like that, and I haven't played very often, and my I broke my hand a long time ago, so my ring finger is a little cockeyed now, so it's a little tricky for me to play.
Yeah. I broke my pinky.
Oh, there you go. See, So, coming out of the side.
I get what you're saying.
You know, you mentioned Parkinson's and breaking your hand, and that reminds me of Michael J. Fox, who played Marty McFly in the Back to the Future series. And in that series, he is taunted by a peer of his, Needles, who challenges him to a drag race.
Yeah.
And in the future, we realize that because of that drag race, he gets into a car accident with a Rolls Royce, breaks his hand, and he's no longer able to play the guitar and pursue his career as a rock musician. And the guy that played Needles was Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Wow. And that's a segue right there.
Your next song is Naked in the Rain by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, anyone who knows me would probably think, God, that was a fantastic segue. It's like you're a professional or something.
Yeah, he does do that.
Anyone close to me, if, you know, knows, would hear Red Hot Chili Peppers as one of my songs and be like, what? I'm not a huge Chili Peppers fan. I like their older stuff, but the reason why I chose this song is because it reminds me of my wife. She's very much a like a hippie at heart, I would say.
Right.
But she's not the dainty girly girl. She's out in the back. She's gardening. She doesn't wear gloves. She doesn't wear shoes. She's just like in the dirt. She's a animal lover. And this whole song is pretty much about how, you know, naked in the rain.
Does she garden naked in the rain?
No, it would be quite a sight. And we just got a fence put up in our backyard, so maybe it's, you know, time to ask the question. But it just reminds me of her and her, you know, like her connection with nature and everything like that. And it's also a reminder to me to, you know, because I'm very much based audio and technology, and it's a reminder to me to, you know, remember that, you know, outside, barefoot outside, and just staring up at the sky is sometimes the best thing for you.
Bye.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXE Acra 90.7 FM. That was Red Hot Chili Peppers' Naked in the Rain. And today on the show, we have Ryan Bosch talking to us about the songs and items he's going to take to his cabin in the Catskills.
Now, Ryan, I mentioned earlier about the Crocodile Cafe. And the correlation that I was trying to get at is regarding your next item, which is your Crocs.
Stealthily removed one of my Crocs. And these were... everybody makes fun of me for these. All my friends say, you know, call me, you know, a dork for wearing these. But I love them. I don't usually leave the house. This is a special occasion. Like, I brought these for you guys enjoy.
Thank you.
And I will not leave the threshold of my home with them on typically, but I love them so much because it just, for me, I put them on and every night I come home from work, when I used to come home from work, like late or whatever with the, and even now after the coffee shop, when I was, I come home, I take my shoes off, I put these on, I immediately know that it's relaxation time. I'm home, I work in these too outside. You know, it just, it's a silly thing to talk about, but I love them to death.
Well, I love shoes. I just spent $250 on a new pair of shoes.
Good man.
Slip-on shoes. I'll show you them before you leave.
Please. And, I'm a shoe guy, too.
I value a good pair of shoes, so I get it. I used to have a pair of, I'll be honest with you, it wasn't Crocs. It was like an imitation Croc.
How dare you?
And
Croc knockoff.
So, but I understand.
It was an alligator.
I wore them outside. So
yeah,
yeah. But what's the correlation between the Crocodile Cafe and these?
Nothing.
No.
Just the name. Similar. The name only.
Yeah. He lied.
But those are some fancy looking Crocs. I see. Like,
yeah,
they're like.
Yeah, yeah. They're
Croc Sport.
Yeah, yeah, they got they have leather tops on them, right. And I don't know. They were a gift, Christmas gift. Who was it? I can't remember who it was from. Actually, that's terrible.
Did somebody get them for Christmas? Say they're dorky. I know. Give me Ryan.
Yeah. Well, one year as kind of a FU, I guess, to everybody who breaks my chops about these things, I bought Crocs for everybody for Christmas. And I turned a couple people, but most of them just kind of threw them in the back of their closet and were like, I'm never wearing these. I can't even bring myself to do it.
You've given me an idea, Leo. So I read online that you can buy little addendum stickers and stuff like that for
I'm a purist. I don't like to.
He's a Croc purist.
Yeah, I don't like to put like buttons and things like that on them.
No, yeah. Right. That's just going to be a bit beyond.
Yeah, I think that's a bit too much. I would say, they are just a pair of shoes, and if I start bedazzling them, that's when I think it's time to check into the nut house.
You know, that might be, if you ever wanted to get into stand up, that could be your trademark. Wearing your Crocs on stage.
No, I couldn't do that. That's. I don't like the shticky type stuff.
Yeah. Well, they are actually for your relaxation, and doing comedy isn't relaxing in the sense that you're going into the pale. You know, you're standing off stage, you're waiting to go on, and I don't know if I told you.
You did
comedy for about 3-4 years, and I kind of equate it to being a truck driver. You know, it's a single man. You're on there on your own. It's you against the universe. And if it goes wrong, it's on your shoulders. If it goes well, it's just elating, you know.
Yeah.
Given that you told me that you like to wear them when you're relaxing, I don't know if wearing your Crocs would be a good idea.
Yeah, I think it'd be a little too relaxed. I'd have to be on my toes, and you can't get on your toes on these things.
Now, talking about comedy, is that something that you see yourself doing in the future?
Well, I mean, with the podcast and everything is kind of my comedic outlet right now, and I've always wanted to do comedic talk radio, and now that and podcasting just seemed easier for me because I can curse and say outlandish stuff without getting in. See, I almost slipped there. I can say outlandish stuff without getting in trouble, but... Stand-up, I think, to me, is you need a big set on you to get up there. Like I was, like I said before, I was in bands and everything. In a band, it's, you know, people say, oh, you were in a band, it should be easy to get up on stage. It's not, because, you know, if I screw up a note or a line or whatever, I can always lean on my bass player, lean on my drummer to kind of pull me back into the mix. But when you're up there alone when you're doing stand up, and it's just you and the audience and your wits, and you know, you just have to you have to be on your game, and it's frightening for me, but I want to do it. It'll happen. I need to be confident in my material, I think, is what it is.
I think I've seen in interviews with comedians, and even, you know, Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, he talks with stand-ups about the whole process. And, you know, talking about having a big set, you have to have a variety of material, you know, and that's, comedians would call it a set, right?
I was talking a big, you know, a set of...
Yeah, well, double entendre.
Yes. So, but you need a diverse big set so that you can, you know, okay, I'm trying these jokes.
It's not
working with this crowd. Let's try something else. See if that works. But that's got to be so hard. You have to have hours of dialogue just memorized.
And, you know, you can have an hour of material, but only 5 minutes of it is worth it.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be willing to write a joke, see that it's just bombing and it's just not doing anything, and then just toss it and then move on.
Conversely, when you say you've got a 20-minute set, when I played and did gigs in Glasgow, it's different from America. A lot of times you do gigs in America, it's bars.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens in bars is, people normally don't pay to get in, so they're not psychologically they're not investing in the evening. So if they want to stand at the bar and talk, they'll talk. So the atmosphere isn't hinged on the comedians. Whereas when I played in Glasgow, I played in comedy clubs, and people were paying to get in, paying a lot of money to get into the clubs. So if you do in a Wednesday night and it's like half full, and people aren't drinking as many beers because they're working the next day, then a joke that is a good joke will get like a chortle, a good laugh. But on a Friday and Saturday night, the length of the laugh will be double because people are drinking and they're off the next day and they're there to enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
You may think you've got a 20-minute set, but that 20-minute set may only take 15 minutes on a quiet night. It might take 35 minutes on a busy night. So your next song, Ryan, is Queens of the Stone Age, If I Had a Tail.
This is off of their Like Clockwork album, and it's their latest album. They're working on a new one right now, but I've been a Queens fan for a long time, and this is one of those bands that their sound evolves every single album. And the most amazing thing to me about these guys is that I think Like Clockwork, their latest album, is a masterpiece.
Sure.
And they've had I think this is their fifth or sixth album.
Wow.
And to progressively get better
it's kind of unique, isn't it?
It's incredible. And the story behind it is really unique. You know, basically the main guy of the entire band is Josh Homme. He used to be in Caius, and he left Caius to form Queens of the Stone Age. He got an infection. He almost died.
Oh.
I think it was like MRSA or something in his knee. And he almost died. And a lot of the album is very melancholy and dark, but beautiful too. Just the arranging and the composure and the composition and the musicianship in this album to me just hit me and actually made me go, oh, I stink at music. I stink at everything. I can't possibly be as creative as this. And it speaks to me on like this really intense, it's an intense feeling I get. Yeah. I can't really describe it. I feel like I got this jolt of energy and sadness and I don't know, something about it.
That was Queens of the Stone Age, If I Had a Tail.
Yeah, I was doing a little reading about Queens of the Stone Age. And on May 14th, 2005, the group was the musical guest on Saturday Night Live hosted by Will Ferrell. And one of Ferrell's popular SNL characters, fictional Blue Oyster Cult cowbellist Gene Frankel, made a reappearance on the show playing with the Queens on their first song of the night, Little Sister. Frankel played the song's woodblock using a cowbell along with the band.
Yeah, that was... Will Ferrell is, you know, sometimes people, you know, are probably pretty tired of him by now because he's so in your face and all over the place, but... He's a funny man. He's really friggin' funny. I love that guy. But yeah, that was Lullabies to Paralyze. Yeah, that was a good song, Little Sister. Sorry.
Well done, mate. I enjoyed that story.
Yeah. Dynamite dropping.
Now, Ryan, your next item is a notebook that you would like to take to write down funny jokes and comedy bits.
Yeah, it's sitting in my bag. There's nothing really... there's only a handful of things in there. I actually have... I try to write down ideas for all kinds of different, you know, bits or concepts and everything. I try to just... If I think of something, I got to get it down. Because if it doesn't... If I don't write it down, it's gone. I don't... I have a terrible memory. And all my friends can attest to that. So... I need something to get my ideas down because I just, some of them I think are really good. And then, you know, I'll write something down. I'll go back to it and I'll go, oh, that's terrible. I'll tear the page out and toss it, you know, or I'll try and fix it or whatever. But
so I'll give you a line for when you're in the Catskill cabin, right?
Okay.
A line to start you off writing something. Today I come back from a walk in the woods, and when I came into the house, there was a bear sitting on the chair smoking a cigar. Discuss.
It sounds like that. What was it? Oh, God. The director. He did Small Time Crooks, and it's gonna kill me. Forget it. Lost my train of thought.
I don't know. Sorry.
Again.
Alfred Hitchcock.
Terrible. he's comedian and director. Glasses. Never mind.
What other movies did he do?
Annie Hall. That was
Annie Hall. Woody Allen.
Woody Allen. Oh, he's got that bit about the moose. He hit the moose, and then they were exchanging insurance, and they went to the party, and the moose won for best costume. And if you go on YouTube and just type that in, you know, type that in Woody Allen and stand up moose and listen to that bit. It's a brilliant bit. I'm not a huge fan of him, but that bit is fantastic. Just the pacing of it and everything is wonderful.
One of my favorite scenes of Woody Allen is when he goes in to rob a bank and he hands a note over to the woman and he's like, I have a gun. And she's like, I have a gup. No, it says gun. And he's like, no, it says gap. And then she gets a colleague over and she's like, what does that say? I have a gup. So they're having this discussion about whether it's a gun or a gup, you know. It's quite funny. So anyway, Mike.
Ryan, your last item that you want to bring is The Ultimate Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams.
This, I read this book kind of later in life when I was commuting down to the city to go to the Institute of Audio Research. I had a lot of free time on the train and I got this, the complete, you know, The Ultimate Hitchhiker's Guide, which is all of Douglas Adams' works for the Hitchhiker's universe.
Yeah.
And I just remember I'm on the train around a bunch of strangers reading this book, laughing out loud at some of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. And it just goes along with the theme of how I am with life, not to take things too seriously, and just the absurdity of it. And the randomness and the zaniness of it is just it's incredible to me. It's like to me, weaving a great comedic story is as good as any painting to me, or sculpture. Mm-hmm. And his writing is brilliant. It keeps you engaged, and just, you know, just the fact that, you know, always remember, you know, don't forget your you know, you always have your towel and don't panic. You know, those are just the simple things to take away from the book. And sure. I'll find myself at the coffee shop. I got six coffees deep. I'm like behind. I screwed up on something and I got to play catch up. And I just say to myself, don't panic.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of, it's like a little like my, you know, Zen. Om kind of thing. Don't panic.
I read the books years ago when I was in college over the summer. And there are so many hilarious, witty little scenes, and irony and great British humor. Is there anything in particular, any favorite parts that you have? Or
my favorite as well, there's two. I can't remember what book it is, but Ford Prefect, he goes back to the Hitchhiker's Guide Publishing.
Yeah.
And he's about to enter the office of the head editor. And he's going through his head all the steps he has to make to get into the office, avoid all the security systems and getting shot at, dive over the couches and get in there. And he does all this stuff to avoid all these pitfalls and everything like that. And then all of a sudden he realizes that nothing has happened and he looks up and there's just a guy, not the original editor, just sitting behind the desk, staring at him, watching him do all this acrobatic crap around the room to try and avoid getting killed. And I just thought that was, because he's playing it out in his head and you think that it's happening. And then when he realizes it's not, it was really funny. But the other big thing about the book is that the Earth is destroyed in the first couple chapters of the book.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing thing to do. It is a space movie. It's a sci-fi book or a movie. Well, it's a movie too. It's a space book. It's a sci-fi book. But to destroy the Earth, it was just a ballsy piece of writing that I just was like, wow, this is just intense and really incredible. And it just thinking back on Douglas Adams and like researching him and everything like that, it actually made me sad when I found out when I found out that he died. I was like, oh. it really was like heavy on my heart for. Mm. No real reason. I had no connection to him. It just like his...
Well, the book.
Not so much the book, just his outlook on life. And I was like, man, he was one of the good ones that was gone too soon, you know?
So. I'm going to have to read these books.
Oh, you've never read them?
No.
Oh, they're fantastic. You won't be able to put it down.
That's next on my list.
Well, I won't give away too much, but I do have a couple items of trivia for you gentlemen about these books. Andy, if you haven't read it,
nope,
you're going to have a hard time. But... Mm-hmm. We'll try it anyway. First question. What does The Hitchhiker's Guide have printed on the front cover?
Do not wear Crocs.
In large, friendly letters, don't panic.
Nice. Don't panic. Very good. And next question. What is the answer to the ultimate question in the book?
Keep your toe.
It's a good guess.
Yeah.
It's 42.
Yeah.
42.
42 is the answer.
Don't tell me why, because I'm going to read the books.
Okay.
There's going to be people driving saying, 42! 42!
Yeah. Well, we're getting close to the end here. Ryan, your last song is Peter Gabriel's San Jacinto.
Yeah. Peter Gabriel, first heard Peter Gabriel when I was very young. My growing up in the 80s and everything, my parents would listen to Peter Gabriel's So album and Up. So and Up were like the big albums that came out at the time. And I didn't really, as a, you know, a little kid, I really didn't understand what I was hearing and everything like that. And as I got older, I kept finding myself going back to Peter Gabriel. And then I sat, one day it clicked with me when I realized that this guy is just a brilliant songwriter. Much like the Queens of the Stone Age touched me, Peter Gabriel, well, that's going to sound really bad, but Peter Gabriel struck a chord with me. That sounds much better. Peter Gabriel struck a real chord with me, and I just think another brilliant songwriter to me he's just the end-all, be-all, personally, for me.
He's a fantastic human being. He's a very big humanitarian.
Right.
And, you know, songs like Biko, for example,
yeah,
epitomize his mm-hmm. thought process in terms of justice for the world yeah. and stuff like that.
And San Jacinto is about the plight of the Native American in modern times, you know, for the most part. And it the song is just, to me, when I first heard it, it was just so powerful. And the composition of the song, the writing is just, it's so intense. Again, it's one of those songs that for me, it just like, it makes me just, it gets all these visuals flow through my head and it just transports me somewhere else.
It's a wonderfully beautiful song. Now, before we play the song, I watched a video of him talking about what inspired the song, and you were right about the Indian mm-hmm. Tribes in America. He said he turned up in the Midwest. He turned up at this hotel with friends, and the porter, not Mike, the porter said, "I apologize. I'm kind of troubled at the moment." And he asked why, and he said, "But I've just been told that my apartment in the city is on fire, and I have a cat, and my cat is in the apartment." So Peter Gabriel offered to take him to the apartment. So he took him to the apartment, and to cut a long story short, the cat was saved, and the guy was elated with that. And then he went back to the hotel, and the gentleman was a Native American, and they spoke for hours, and he told him about past. It was almost like he was on the run from his tribe. And he was telling them why. And one of the things that he had to do when he was a young boy was he was taken by a medicine man into the woods. And the medicine man had a bag with a rattlesnake in it. And the rattlesnake was made to bite him in the arm. And if he made it down... And the reason why was it was hoped that the poison would evoke hallucinations.
Mm-hmm.
And if he made it back to the tribe alive, then he would be considered a mature man within the tribe. And he eventually made it back about 3-4 days later. And now he was on the run for some other reason. But that was what inspired the song.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm talking about it just now, I think it's important to talk about it in order for people, when they're listening to the song, to get a sense of it.
Mm. Yeah, and I was actually lucky enough to see him perform live at SPAC.
Yeah.
My wife won tickets on the radio. I was in a really bad area traveling for work in Roscoe, New York. And I was listening to WPDH. And they were giving away Peter Gabriel tickets when he was touring with the New Blood Orchestra. And I just didn't expect, I didn't expect anything. But they were like, "Oh, when you hear a Peter Gabriel song, be the 10th caller." So all of a sudden, The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway starts playing. That's when Peter Gabriel was in Genesis. So I pick up the phone. I have terrible reception. So I had called my wife earlier. I said, "Listen to PDH. If a Peter Gabriel song comes on, call." And The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway came on, and my reception had just died on my phone as I was listening to the song. I'm like, oh no, because it was kind of obscure, and I was really hoping that she got it. And then I lost the radio station, so I had no idea if she did get on the air. And then later on, she calls me up. She's like, "So what are you doing on Monday?" And I got to see him live, and he played this song, and it was
superb.
It was incredible. It was really just an incredible performance. And it's one of those memories that's going to be burned into my, going to be burned into my psyche.
Buffalo robe, sage and bundle, rub on skin. Outside, cold air. Stand, wait for rising sun. Red paint, eagle feathers. Coyote calling, it has begun. Something moving in, tasted in my mouth and in my heart. It feels like dying slow. Letting go of life. Thank you.
That was Peter Gabriel San Jacinto. Now, we've come to the end of the show, and I say this a lot when we come to the end of our shows, that we could have spoken for a long time.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed listening to your stories and your take on things. So thank you very much, Ryan.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I'm glad I could keep it clean for you, too.
Now, we have one more question that mm-hmm. we ask everyone, and given that you work in Crafted Cup, it's more of an apt question than normal. Mike, right. What is that question?
Ryan, how do you take your coffee?
Right now, if it's a drip coffee, I do just milk sugar, but I'm partial to Americanos now, so iced Americanos, which is just espresso and water.
Good man.
So it's a watered-down espresso.
Pretty much, so it's... You get all the espresso flavor without all the
intensity.
Intensity.
Mm, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Did you understand any of that, Mike?
No.
It gets you. It gets you moving. It gets you up and moving. That drink. So.
Ryan, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, guys, man. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Ryan Bosch, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and everyone at WGXC.